And welcome to the episode of Deal Talk. I'm Deal. Let's talk. My guest of the evening is an author, podcaster. He is the co-founder of Result-Driven Leadership. Ladies and gentlemen, give a warm welcome to Vaughn Sigmund. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
I was reading your background. You have an extraordinary background, experience in sales and beyond. What inspired you to create a platform like Result Driven Leadership?
So I'm going to bore you with a little bit of a before and then after.
Okay,
so,
let's do it.
After a 40 plus year career, I retired from a company that many of your listeners may have heard of, CarMax.
Yes.
I was one of the early folks into CarMax. I saw it up through its, what I call its teenage years. Once it reached its adult time, it was time for me to go away. So I cashed in my chips and retired. I learned a lot from that organization. Learned a lot about how to scale a business, mostly how to treat people and how important the philosophy is. If we take care of our people, they'll take care of our customers and everything else will take care of itself. They were deeply invested in making sure they had a great place to work. And and still to this day, I think they're over 30 years old, have been a Fortune 100 best places to work every single year, which that's quite a designation.
Yes.
My takeaway out of all that was I'd worked for companies that weren't such great places to work most of my career. I was lucky enough to work for this company at the end of my career. And they really did things very differently. But I saw how this valuing of people paid off from a business standpoint. It's not just a nice thing to talk about. There is a real business proposition that's including and taking care of your people and just treating them well, a great culture and environment. So when I retired for about 90 days. Not working was because of an ex-wife, not an option. And because I just like to stay busy, not an option. So I knew I was going to go do something, did not want to work as many people in their 50s when they retire. I didn't want another boss, so I was going to start my own business. What do I want to do? And as I was out looking around, I started doing some consulting and coaching with business owners, and I got this taste, this flavor, this entrance into private business ownership. I only worked for primarily public companies most of my life.
Right.
And there's a very different atmosphere, a different approach to business. And I found that there's especially on the sales side of the business, there's a deep need for companies, scaling companies, even more mature companies, to understand that you cannot manage salespeople like anybody else in the organization.
I agree, yes.
However, many companies try and they get frustrated with their sales team and they get frustrated with their sales growth and they have a lot of turnover in the sales teams and they keep wanting to change people thinking that's going to fix the problem, and it never fixes the problem. There's one person you have to fix or have to change, and that's who's managing the sales team. And when I left my prior organization, I had 107 sales managers reporting up through the organization to me, at over 1,000 salespeople. I had devoted a lot of although I was over everything, I had great people to take care of operations and business operations and purchasing. I didn't have to worry much about that because I had an exceptional team. I focused a lot on the sales and I got deeply geeked out on the sales science and the art of selling, the profession of selling, and understood through study and study and study of best habits, vital behaviors, what the best people did, not only in selling, what made them successful, what did they say, what did they do, how did they approach it, but primarily, what did the best sales managers do? How did they approach things? So I took that knowledge, I did a lot of research and study, and I created a business around that. And so the business now is working with private companies, regardless of there's two types of companies I work with, starting to scale and have scaled and trying to fix their sales team. I can build a sales team or I can fix a sales team, but I have to start with one center point, and that's the sales manager. The biggest mistake companies make, and I've said this a lot of times, and sometimes people get mad at me for saying it, the biggest mistake companies make, Dio, is they promote their best salesperson to sales manager and expect the sales team to perform at a higher level. Well, these accidental sales managers, I call them, that's becoming more and more of a popular term now, is accidental managers. We take people who are functionally very, very good at something, whether it's in sales or operations or accounting or whatever, and we make them a manager, but we don't provide them with the knowledge, the skills, the tools, the coaching to be good at managing people. That is so much harder than just selling something. And very often, great salespeople, they're missing some of the DNA they need to be great coaches, which is what salespeople really need as a manager. They need a great sales coach, someone who's supportive, who's consultative with them, is there to help them out, not bang them over their head with their KPIs, is helping them figure out how to the behaviors they need to change in order to influence positively their KPIs, to train them, to pick them up after rejection, not get mad at them when they lose a deal, right? It's really, and that's one of my courses, mm-hmm. is how to inspire a sales team. And when even these sales managers who were accidentally made manager, once they hear and see the right way to do this, the light comes on, and they can very often make that switch very quickly. But absent of that knowledge, mm-hmm. they don't know what they don't know. And my role is to provide them with the information they need and the approaches that are required, the
preparation
to be a great sales manager.
Yes, yes.
We all make money when we're selling a lot of things.
Yes.
And what's holding us back? And very often it's, you know, in the book, Extreme Ownership, Jocko Willink, he said it, which doesn't really talk about sales much, but it talks about management leadership a lot. There's really no bad teams. There's bad leaders of teams. Mm-hmm. And I saw that replicated hundreds of times in my career, that I could take a team that was underperforming, put a great leader in charge of that team, and all of a sudden this team that was very challenged, underperforming, got better almost instantly. Conversely, if I put the wrong person over a really good, highly functioning team, and they did not have the chops, they didn't have the skill set that the previous person had, I could see that team sink. Same team, same customer, same economy, same everything. One person makes the difference. And so many private companies don't understand, because nobody's ever shown them differently, mm-hmm. the value of that leadership, especially over a sales team. I told you it was going to be a long story.
No, but it's quite inspiring. It's so many details that the normal Joe doesn't know. Like, I'm able to understand your lingo because I was in sales. I was in operations. I managed from 25 to 50 properties when I was at, you know, working for corporate. And I everything you're saying, it's just like I'm reliving again, you know, team building, managing, time management, inspiring. Like when I first started a job, or I first gained an account, right? It was negotiation. I'm new. They know I'm the manager. I just got the contract. The first thing will ask me, I want a raise. I can't do that. But, you know, it quickly falls down and we're, okay, what can I help you? What do you want? How can we make this work for you and for me, so this product, this property can flourish and our contract can get bigger, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And it's setting goals. I'm shocked at how many companies I come into that have not really set goals for their sales team. They just sell as much as you need. And then disappointed with the outcomes, setting goals. But more importantly, it's one thing to set a goal. What is my roadmap to achieving that goal? What specifically, what playbook and what plays out of that playbook do I need to run in order to achieve that goal? And it's different for every single person on the team. There's some uniqueness, but every person on that team has a unique skill set that a smart sales manager, a skilled sales manager knows how to tap into, devise a strategy to help that person get to where they want to be with the right motivators along the way. You know, I've always believed that sales success is 90% of it's right between a salesperson's ears. And as long as they're motivated, as long as they're inspired, and, you know, going back to another book, you know, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, you have sales managers more than any other role in an organization. If you're a business owner managing a sales team, don't ever overlook this. Is you've got to make deposits into the emotional bank account. You've got to over deposit into the bank account of salespeople, because those deposits pay huge dividends. But if all you're doing is withdrawing, you're going to struggle. And they're going to show up for work and they're going to just do their job. They're not going to go above and beyond. They're not going to be inspired to be highly successful. They're going to do what it takes to hit their number each month and no more. And a lot of people get frustrated with salespeople because they hit their number and no more. They come close and no more. But they can't find that other gear to get them to the next level. And it costs zero. That's the amazing part. Mm. It costs you zero to improve a sales team. All you have to do is be complimentary of them. Find the wins. Play up the wins, play down the losses. You don't have to point out every damn thing a salesperson does wrong. Yeah. The rest of the company needs to understand that too. They're here to keep the lights on, and they're not going to be as detail oriented as you are in accounts payable. They are going to sell things. And the other thing too, a lot of companies, this is kind of an aha moment. There's three things that every salesperson faces in their job every single day that no other position in the organization, for the most part, faces. They're paid based on performance. They're paid commission.
Yes.
Accounting doesn't have to do that. Operations doesn't do that. But salespeople, their whole paycheck, and sometimes a big part of their paycheck, is commission. They have competition that they're fighting against every single day. Does accounts payable have competition they're fighting against to get their job done every day? No, but salespeople are fighting competition. And then the third thing is probably the most important thing that many people don't understand is they face rejection day in and day out. Even a great sales organization will close 20% of the deals they get. Right? So they're failing 80% of the time. Imagine failing 80% of the time and going home and feeling good about that. No, when your boss is beating you up about it all day, right? Yes. And so that's where these over deposits in the emotional bank account are so vital to the success of a sales team and a team in general. By the way, this applies to almost every team, but in sales in particular, you have to overplay it because that's the jet fuel that's going to drive the success that you seek out of a sales team. And every great sales team I've ever worked with, that sales manager doesn't have to be this big, loud, obnoxious guy like me. Very, very often they're fairly subtle people. They're very supportive people. They're very given. They're very team oriented. They have the heart of a teacher. They're not ego driven. That what they are, they recognize that this team reflects me and I'm going to do everything I can to help make this team successful. And if I start with their brain, I start with their emotions, the likelihood of success goes up dramatically.
Wow. How much in your experience, how much is it mental? Because in order to to get your goal, to stay consistent, to move forward? Because I'm in sales. Me and my wife have our own small real estate business, and where I'm always cold calling. Hey, are you selling your property? Would you like to? Are you interested in buying property? And 50 of the time, 50, 60 of the time, I'm getting no's. But it's having that mindset of hunger for more. Keep going until you get a yes. Keep going until you get a yes.
So and you go to another important point. You have to have the right behavior or the right personality. That you have to have a makeup that's going to keep you making those phone calls. You have to have this level of optimism. I use DISC a lot in my business. I use it as a benchmark for hiring salespeople. I use it to make, if we're struggling with a particular salesperson, we look at this to understand their behavioral patterns, to understand what levers we need to potentially pull, or if they're even a good fit for a salesperson. Maybe they're just in the wrong seat within the organization. They may be a very good person, just they're not cut out to be a salesperson, because it is a special DNA required to keep making that phone call in the face of rejection and turn down and no's, not interested, and hang-ups. And I know you've had a few hang-ups in your life, as have I.
Yeah.
That sucks, because we take that personally. You can say all day long, don't take that personally. It's not about you. It's about them. They're having a bad day. We take it personally.
Yes.
It's hard not to. But if I've got the wrong behavior makeup, and I take too much of that to heart, I can't handle this rejection, and I've got a boss that's not going to be empathetic of this rejection all day, then I'm not going to make those phone calls, or I'm going to dummy up my CRM to make it look like I made the phone call so I can protect myself from getting all this rejection. But it's very much mental. But I have to have the mental DNA, the personality DNA, in order to be successful at that. So your example is perfect. I'm calling, I'm getting no's all day long, but when I get that yes,
it's everything.
That is a sweet sound, isn't it?
Yes.
That is a sweet sound, and that keeps me coming back. As long as I'm getting those, they may be the minority versus the majority, but as long as I'm getting them and there's some celebration around it, I'm coming back.
Yes. So what is there a common issue? Like, let's say my company hires you, or your company, when you walk in, what is the most common thing that you often find that you see in your experience? Okay, it's missing this, and this right here is what's missing to take them to the next level.
Yeah, they don't have a process.
You
know, and I call it I build a process for every company I work with. I put it into a playbook. It's tailored to whatever industry they're in and the particular sales approach that they have. But sales is generally sales, but there's different plays that are going to be more successful in different industries.
Right.
But they've got to have a playbook. They need these salespeople, and the sales manager needs to have something to manage. The salespeople need to understand what's expected of them. Let's get each other on the same page. But if there's this vagueness about what's expected of me, what works, what doesn't work, when do I do this? How do I do that? How many of these should I be doing? What's step one? What's step two? What's step three? Step four? It's every sale is just an advancement of the ball. I just want to get 10 more yards, 10 more yards, 10 more yards, and understanding what's going to get me 10 yards, maybe sometimes 20 yards. What's the next move in a process to get me there? So I'm going to make the phone call. I'm going to get connected with somebody. What's that conversation? What am I going to say when I get that person on the phone? What are my discovery questions? How do I activate my listening skills during the course of that conversation? When at the end of that conversation, what's my next step? My next step is that to set an appointment, make a presentation. Do I shoot a proposal over right then? Whichever way, I've got to talk somebody through this proposal. How do I do that properly? What are the best practices to make a presentation of a proposal? And making sure we all have these tools to be able to do that. And sometimes it's very little nuanced things. Sometimes it's very structural. But if you're doing the first four or five things pretty correctly, when it gets to the close, if you've done these things really well, the close is just a foregone conclusion. You don't have to read a book on all the closing techniques in the verbal judo to get somebody to say yes. You've already gotten them there because you've built a relationship. You've discovered their pains and needs. You've presented a solution to all their pains and needs. I've built this relationship with you. They like me. They trust me. When I give them and I qualified them, by the way, they can afford my product before I ever get too far into this conversation. That's a game changer because that wastes a lot of time if I wait until the proposal for them to find out what the price is. That screws up a lot of deals. But if I follow all these steps in the right way every single time, my likelihood of success goes way up. So one of the first things I ask is, where's your written sales process? Oh, we don't have one of those. And, you know, they're salespeople. I hired experienced people. They should know how to sell.
Yes. Yes.
Nothing further from the truth. They may have sold before. That doesn't mean they know how to sell. What's the roadmap to a sale? And so, yeah, that's the first thing that is almost 100% of the time missing and needed within an organization. It's just a process.
Oh man, you've given me so much vivid memories because when I first got into operations, I didn't know the name what you're describing, but I always end up asking them something for like that. What is your process? What is, because I saw like we're losing clients. We're losing opportunities. We have to capitalize on them. And when I would maneuver away and get the client to say, okay, give me a proposal. I did everything and anything to get to the right people and give them that proposal. Waited 2-3 weeks, even for a month. And I'm like, this is the time to shine. You guys say you want to make money. This is your opportunity. I got you thus far here. All you have to do is close it. And I get it. I get it. You're on, you know, you're hitting the nail right there.
Yeah, it's once you hear it, it sounds pretty obvious, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's like so many things in life and in business, it may be right in front of us, but we can't see it because we don't know to look for it.
Yes. So in your leadership program, what are some things that you can offer that would help companies grow?
So it's there's the functional, there's the strategic, the fundamentals we have to get in place. We have to get the architecture. Then we have to start putting the right people into the architecture. And that's understanding what person is going to be successful here. What do they look like? What do they sound like? And that's understanding that I can teach skills, but I can't teach traits or competencies. Right? I can teach somebody how to turn on the printer and make copies, but I can't teach them work ethic. I can't teach them tenacity. I can't teach them communication skills. There's certain aspects, sometimes even time management, people struggle with naturally. They either bring that to the party or they don't. And I have to understand, first of all, what of those untrainables must I have in each individual member of my sales team for them to be successful? I've got to define that up front. That's the second big game changer is, what's the benchmark for success around here? They usually have a successful salesperson. Let's find out what their DNA makeup is, and then let's replicate that a bunch of times. And there's scientific approaches. There's pre-employment assessment, sales assessments. I use the DISC assessment. There's dozens of them out there that will give you the benchmark and understand whether this person fits your needs. Just because they're nice, just because they're friendly, just because they can tell a good story, it does not mean that they're going to be a good salesperson. There's a certain amount of drive and competition and initiative that I've got to be able to challenge a customer every now and then. I've got to be able to ask for certain things. I need to push back every now and then. If I don't have enough dominance in me as a salesperson, I'm going to be, the customer's going to control me.
Yeah.
And a good salesperson knows how to masterfully and professionally control the customer and the conversation that goes around that. And so, but you have to have the right personality type for somebody to be willing to even try that. So we have to have the right people in place. And then they need to understand that then there's the full sales training. How do I prospect? You know, how important, how do I value proposition my product or service against anybody else's? Do I know the competition better than the competition knows me? Have I immersed myself into this industry and I know what the competition does? I know what we do, and I know how to talk against or present against that competition. Am I educated on the product and the industry?
Yes.
You know, time management. How am I spending my day? Very often I'll, I did this recently with another team. They each sell about $1.5 million per month, which is good, but we'd need to get them to $2 million per month each. And they spend a lot of time on customer service issues. They've got a customer service department, but they spend a lot of their time working on customer service issues because they don't trust the customer service department to take care of these issues.
Mm.
Well, I challenged them. I said, let's figure out how much you make per hour. How much you make per hour? And they all made around $80-something per hour. I said, and in order for you to hit $1.5 million, how much do you need to sell every hour of every day to hit your number? And it was around $8,000. So then I asked these team members, I say, okay, when you went down to help make sure that box was packed with the product properly, and it got out today, was that worth $88 per hour? Was that worth $8,000 for you to go downstairs and spend an hour working on that? Boom, they never thought about it like that. So no, it's not. So don't waste your time. You only make money if you're talking to prospects, if you're talking to your existing customers and upselling them and cross-selling them and making stuff happen around moving products and services to people. If you're wasting time doing what a nice person wants to do, and I get it, and I'm not saying that you never should go above and beyond to take care of a customer personally, but you can't spend 20 hours a week doing that.
Yeah.
And because it's going to cost you money. So it's making sure they have the support within the organization. You know, there's some company, almost every company I start with, they make the salespeople fill out their own orders. They build their own invoices. What? That's the biggest waste of time for a salesperson ever. They need to have somebody that you're paying $18 or $20 an hour to build those orders. We can teach anybody to do that. A salesperson just sends over, order these people this. They can fill out the invoice and get it over to the shipping department. We shouldn't be wasting salespeople time doing that, but we don't think about this downtime and the cost of taking people, salespeople, out of what they're paid to do and how they make money. You know, how do they present a product? There's one of these rules that I discovered through time is the 3x30 rule.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of salespeople, and I'm sitting here obviously not following my own advice, but many salespeople believe they have to dominate the conversation with words. They talk, and the poor prospect or the person they're presenting to is just getting overwhelmed with words. Well, there's this very special technique called the 3x30 rule. Every 3 minutes, you need to stop and engage your audience or engage your prospect for about 30 seconds. And so, what do you think about that deal? Does that look like something that would work for you? Is that looking like the solution you've been looking for? How do you see this working in your organization? And what you're looking for are these early yeses. But more importantly, you're trying to get engagement. That if they know they're going to be called yes. on every few minutes, they're going to pay attention to you. And so it's subtle, but that's super powerful. And when you change those little bitty aspects, but it's understanding all those little best practices and fundamentals of effective selling, and somebody's got to come in and show you all that.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And, you know, I think the last statistic I saw is 90... It's north of 90% of everybody who is a sales professional in America today has never cracked a book, have never read the first book on how to sell. Over 50% have never been through formal sales training, and we expect them to be successful. Little stuff like that. So I come in and look for the opportunities, get the fundamentals in, teach the sales manager how to coach and inspire sales team, how to be supportive, get some of the operational issues worked out. And it takes time. It's generally about a year to get something like this either installed or turned around. But after that, they're good. Yeah. You know, I try to build everything that's evergreen. Once I'm done, it's turnkey. Just keep it going.
Do you, in your program, is there anything along the line, such as like script reading that you go through? Because because my wife is the agent and I, you know, work hand in hand. I always go on to these program or these event, and I constantly, you know, I'm talking to people, right? And I'm like, you got to use this script. Like it was, if you're being cast on a lead role, you got to get into that mindset and where you're not reading, you're talking, you're flowing. You have to be confident, because 99% of the outcome of that conversation is either going to lead to a sale or not.
100% right.
How does your organization 100%. Assist with that?
So we have a different set of scripts for different parts of the presentation or the sale process, but they're loose enough. We have to give some authorship to the person who's going to be delivered. That it has to be theirs. It can't be so rigid that you can only say these things.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because that turns a lot of people off. However, it's important for them to understand the power words and making sure they include that in their script. Those are non-negotiable. And avoiding the weak words, like, would you mind if I, rather than, you know what we need to do? Next step is to do this, right? Some of those power role words that keep people in charge of a conversation, you come across as confident, but not. You got to remove kind of and what would you maybe, you know, got to get rid of all that because that's our natural. Listen, we're avoiding rejection. We want to soften things up as much as we can to avoid that rejection. But we get more rejection with that because we appear as low confidence. When you come across as somebody that's confident, in charge, you know what you're doing, they tend to be more tuned into you because they're looking for an expert. You're here to help them, not sell them something. You're here to solve a need that they have, not sell them something. You can't sell something to somebody that they don't need or want. You
can't.
That's
correct, yeah.
And so back to scripting, here's the other very important part of a script. And these are ones that are a little bit non-negotiable, but it's discovery questions. Tell me about your business. Tell me about your problems. How long has that been a problem? What's that costing you? What have you done about it in the past? You know, if we fix this problem, what would that impact your financial situation? You want to get all these numbers and you want to get the emotion tied in. You want to understand what's keeping them up at night or bothering them or holding them back. Once I have all that information, now I'm comparing that to my product or service. Can this fix that? And if it can, and they told me, I need this, I need this, I need this, and I need that. And then I come back and say, well, I got that, I got this, I got this, and I got this. That solves the problem, right? Yeah. How can they say no to that? That's grossly oversimplified, but they have to have the right questions, open-ended questions with a little critical thinking in there, a little bit of probing, that if they have a list, and I give everybody a list of 25 open-ended questions that'll work in any business and any scenario, pick 8 or 10 of them and make those your questions every time. And it's amazing how that turns the needle on performance. Just makes things easier. They're simply, all you're doing is getting their order from them. Then you just make a presentation and say, here it is. Here's what you asked for. Here it is.
Like, you're like a business psychologist.
I play one on TV.
But no, it's such interesting. Do you also offer help for those like entrepreneur, if you know, and this is if they can afford your price, that's the main thing. Because I notice a lot of, let's take myself for example, entrepreneur have major skills and numerous things, right? But now when it comes to selling myself, like it's different when, you know, I'm usually selling myself. Let's just say that it's difficult for me unless I'm, you know, I'm in an a-hole mood, or I'm, you know, one of those days that I feel very cocky and confident, or I'm just trying to, you know, I got tired of trying to, you know, how do you say this, go around the bush, and I'm trying to be direct.
And that's where scripting very often comes in. Is I need to know my 60-second commercial, my 30-second commercial, my the line that I'm going to use every single time. Hey, Dio, this is a cold call. I'll just tell you right up front. So hang on with me. Let me tell you why I'm calling. And if it makes sense, we'll carry on. Okay. Just say that from the beginning. Catch their attention. You don't sound like every other sales schmo calling them. You say, here's who I work with. Here's the problems I solve. Do any of those problems sound like something that's a challenge for you? If yes, let's talk a little bit more. And it gets the conversation going. But if you do that, and there's variations of that, I'm being a little short on that, but if you do that same thing every single time, it opens up the conversation. And now I can start getting into the next step of it. But it's those opening 7 to 10 seconds of that impression. If I come in, I do something that's a little different, it's out of the norm, and I'm just transparent. I'm calling you. You weren't expecting my call. Let me tell you why I'm calling. Here's the problems I solve. If that's something that you need fixing, let's talk about it. Who's going to turn you down?
No one. It's so different. It's so off guard, but yet polite and ethical, and unexpected. Brilliant.
You know, it's a very common approach. Now, I'm not for a minute going to say that I invented that. I learned it from others. But what I have invented is a training and leadership approach to make sure it happens every time.
So for those listening and watching, how can we get a hold of your services?
Visit my website, rdltraining.com. That's Romeo Delta Lima, rdltraining.com. Take a look. I'm primarily working on the sales leadership side of the business. That's my passion. I've got five other guys that work on the management and leadership on the generalized side of it, strategic planning, et cetera. We've got a full fleet of services. Or they can follow me on LinkedIn, Vaughn Sigmund. I am the only Vaughn Sigmund on LinkedIn. I feel very special about that. Or they can follow me on YouTube. Or they can find my podcast, The Business Mechanic.
Boom, there you have it, guys. One last question before we go. Now, and I say this to all my viewers and listeners, because I'm in sales, I understand where he's coming from. For Vaughn, for those who are still iffy, who are thinking about jumping, but are not sure, can you let us know what is one thing that your service provides that might change their business for the better?
Yeah, and I mentioned it earlier. Great question, Dio. It's, you know, you got a problem. Mm. You're looking for a solution. You need to talk to somebody that might be able to help you. I don't guarantee anything. I don't sign contracts with my clients. I tell everybody, if you don't like what I'm doing, you're not seeing the success out of me, fire me. Nobody's done it yet. You might be the first one, but feel free to. Come, let's have a conversation. Let me do a little discovery and unpack what your challenges are. If I can't help you, I know somebody who can. There's a solution to everybody's problem out there. And one of the nice things I've been able to accomplish over the past decade is I've met a lot of exceptional individuals in a lot of different fields of business and services and coaching and training out there. If I can't do it, and I'll tell you I can't do it, I know people who can.
Boom. And that right there is the perfect thing. Everyone needs to invest in your product, because you've been able to admit that. is a great salesperson, but not just a great salesperson, it's somebody who wants to see you grow. Vaughn, it's been an honor talking to you.
Neo, thank you so much. This is awesome. You're a great guy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Make sure you go follow me on Instagram, Deal Talk, Mr. Jim Spartan. Go like and subscribe our YouTube channel at Deal Talk TV. Vaughn, have a good night. I'm out, guys.